My God. Oh. We're in. Look at this, Cameron. On the podcast.
On the podcast, man.
Year's winding down.
It is.
How many dates you have left?
We got 3 more days.
3 more dates?
And then I'm off the map until the end of January.
Are you going to miss being on the road?
Yes, definitely. Without a doubt.
Really?
I think that is probably my favorite. I think it goes like this. It goes like road. The second it goes, I don't know, writing and recording. I don't know. Those intertwine. Those flip-flop for me. But road's always number one for me.
Road's always number one?
Yeah.
I feel like being on the road is like camping, where like when you're camping, all you want, like you go out of your way to go camping, but then when you're camping, all you want to do is be back in your bed.
Pretty much.
Isn't that what the road is?
When you're on the road,
you just want to be off the road. But when you're off the road, you want to be on the road.
That is the best way you could possibly put it.
Is that how you feel?
Without a doubt.
Because I just came off the road. We did 20 dates on the road. I was out with Temecula Road. We were opening up for Breland. And it was fun at first, but then I was ready to get off the road.
Yeah.
But now I want to get back on the road. And now, pretty close. We had a couple days off, like in between that run, but pretty close.
Dang.
Yeah.
Shoot, man, that's still a long run, though.
It's a long run, but you're saying you've got 3 dates left, and then you're done for. You're not doing like a New Year's show or anything.
They tried to make me do it this year.
Did they?
Like, I'm learning the power of no. I think
because I've seen some of those offers for the New Year's shows. They get pretty big, right?
They do, but I don't think it's worth it for me this year. I just am like,
what are you gonna be doing on New Year's instead? Because New Year's is always disappointing. What are you gonna be doing instead?
I'm actually gonna be hiding out. Me and my girlfriend are just gonna stay at the house. We're gonna like try and make a different recipe than we've ever made before, and just hide away from everybody. We don't get much time together, like just one-on-one, so
yeah,
when we do, we like
did that. She say to you, listen, you're not playing a show on New Year's, you're gonna be home?
Oh, she actually told me to take it, and I was like,
she
no,
told you to take
yeah,
it
she did. I
and
was like, I'm good.
Are you serious?
I'm
there
serious.
Was a real offer that came in that was probably appealing.
I'm pretty sure we didn't we?
Yeah, there was a real offer, and you said, I've been out on the road, I sold out this, you know, so many dates on this tour. I've been out opening for people. I put an album out. Give me New Year's off. That's what's happening on New Year's, right? And you're not going to go out. You're not going to go out with friends or anything. It's just you and your girlfriend.
Man, I feel like when I'm on the road, I feel like I'm already out all the time. Like I'm always out
partying, doing the thing.
Yeah, I got to be the entertainer. Yeah. And then when I get to come home, it's like my time to.
How long have you been dating this girlfriend?
About a year and a half.
How'd you guys meet?
Actually, through my manager.
Are you serious? Yeah. Your manager set you up?
Yeah. I guess not technically. We didn't really tell her.
But how did she, what was it, someone that she knew and was like, hey, you should meet this person and put you guys in touch?
I think we were just all kind of like mutual friends before, and then I just started getting the hots for her, and it was all down from there.
But she wasn't trying to set you up.
No.
So you went to your manager and you said, manager, you need to manage this situation. I've got the hots for this person. What do I do? Help me pimp out my life here.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
No. It just, everything worked out, man. It felt like we'd been best friends for years. So.
Oh,
just,
my God. Yeah. That's so cute.
Yeah.
So, okay. So here's what I'm trying to understand, Cameron, because you've got this crazy story, this crazy country music story. And what I don't understand is your song, that's like your biggest song, Giving You Up, this was like one of the first songs that you ever wrote.
Pretty much.
Like in your, three or four songs in. So I don't understand how you do this, because nobody writes good songs out of the gate. How do you do this? How do you just start playing these chords that kind of sound good?
Do you want the long story or the short story?
I've got all the time in the world for you. Cameron, I'm here for you. I'm just trying to figure out, because like I've tried to write some songs in my day, but I didn't have any talent. Where are you getting this from? How'd you write this song?
So basically, I was with this other girl that I was planning on getting married to. I was like 2 weeks away from engagement. Did not work out. 2 weeks before, she was like, no, I just think we need to separate for some time.
You were going to propose in 2 weeks to her.
I was.
Yeah.
And that fell through real quick. So I kind of came home beaten up one night, and I just kind of picked up my guitar, and I was like, I want to write things out that I need to say, because I'm real bad about like maybe sending a message that I probably shouldn't. So I was like, I need to just send some words or put some words down just to get them out of my head. And the first thing I wrote down on the paper was Giving You Up. And I just kind of started rambling. And I probably wrote 2 pages worth of things. And then I kind of picked up my guitar. My guitar was randomly in the room, which I always have my guitar around me. And I just kind of started playing through chords and started singing that melody for the chorus. And I was like, all right, well, I have words here. I can maybe like finagle them around to make them into a song. And that's kind of how it happened. I don't really know.
So you start just, you take a notebook and you just start rambling?
Yeah,
rambling phrases,
yeah.
Right? And then you start playing some chords, and you come up with what? Like this, where are those chords? Like a 1-6?
Yeah, it's 1-1 or 4-6-1-5.
4-6-1-5. You're like, that sounds good. That sounds like something familiar. And then you just, and then the melody just comes to you?
Pretty much. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing how it happened.
And do you think it's a good song when it's finished? Or you think, how
I was
could
like,
it
is a song, and I'm going to play it.
How could it be? I would be thinking, how is it even possible that the third song I ever wrote ends up being, like, could be good? I would think there's no way this song is good.
I still feel the same way, man. And
Do you think it's good now, though? Like, do you think it's a good song, or do you kind of cringe when you hear it?
I guess, I don't know. I'm kind of back and forth. I've gotten so many messages from people that are like, man, this song helped me through such a tough time. And I was like, well, I was in such a tough time when I wrote it. And I know that those words were real and true because I was feeling that when I wrote it. And there's other times when I play the song, I'm like, damn, I wish I'd have changed some of these lines out a little bit.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Like, what line would you change?
I think there's some stuff in the bridge that just kind of feels a little...
Like, maybe it doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, it didn't need to be there, or maybe buffed up a little bit.
Yeah. Like, so, but at the time when you wrote the song, what were you doing? You were working...
I was selling car parts.
You were selling car parts.
Yeah.
So, and you're living in North Carolina, and you're going to get engaged to this girl. In 2 weeks, you're going to propose. Like, you've got it all planned out.
Yeah.
But I understand if you had gotten married to this girl, were you not going to chase the artist thing, or was that not even on your radar?
It was not even on my radar, man. There was nothing in me. Like, I just played bar gigs and stuff like that with my acoustic guitar just to make a little extra cash. Like, just kind of side hustle thing.
But here's what I don't understand, because I think to make it as an artist, you need so much intention and you need so much drive.
You're right.
And all of a sudden, does that click in? Like, maybe, do you feel like, now I'm out of this relationship, so this is a fresh start?
Yeah, I did feel that, and I would say maybe a year down the line, or no, maybe 6 months down the line, I get a phone call randomly while I'm at work, and I answer it because I wasn't really paying attention to work stuff at all, and these people are like, hey, you should come on The Voice, and I'm like, this can't be real. I kind of, like, feel them out and everything. They send me a bunch of information, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is legit. So I went to do that, and I think that was like my first taste of like the music industry, and I was like, oh, this is all I want. So I met so many songwriters while I was out there, and that's what made me want to chase this the most. I was like, the writing, like I want to write it so much,
right?
So
and wait, kinda, how'd they find you? From
I think
Instagram
from
social. You're posting these covers and you're sitting on this song,
yeah,
and are you thinking I gotta hold on to this song, this could be my ticket, this song?
I just wanted music out. It was kind of a bucket list thing for me. It was like, I want to have music on a platform that lives forever. So I was like, I'm going to put it out, see what happens with it. And yeah, it just kind of grew from there.
And then, you go on The Voice, and then when you go on The Voice, then it feels attainable. Then you feel this car parts thing.
I was, yeah. Oh yeah. I put my 2 weeks in. I was like,
right after going on The Voice, or right before,
after, man.
Right after.
Yeah,
you screw this. I'm going to become a big star.
At least I thought. I was like, I'm going to try my best to do something.
And what does everyone say? They say they're like encouraging.
Actually, I would say my whole family's always been super encouraging. My boss wasn't too happy about it, but he learned to love it after a little bit of.
Like, I bet if you asked him now, he said, I was always encouraging.
Yeah, exactly.
I pushed him to do it.
That's exactly
right?
How it is.
But so if you had gotten proposed, or if you had, gotten engaged to this girl, you wouldn't have chased this dream. But maybe The Voice
not.
Would have found you anyway.
Maybe. I don't know. I try and leave the past in the past with that one. I don't know.
Yeah.
So this is like a whole new section of life for me, and I'm like just now breaking into it and exploring it. So
What's the section of what? Like, now that you're an artist?
Yeah.
That section is new.
It feels like all the stuff, like that whole, I guess, planning on getting engaged and that feels like 150 years ago for some reason.
Yeah.
Even though it was like maybe 6 years ago.
Now would you get engaged today, or do you feel like you're young? Like too young?
I would get engaged, yeah.
At
the right time.
The right time.
Yeah.
And maybe if it gets blown off, you'll pivot to a whole other career.
Yeah,
path.
Who knows? And I'm going like water skiing champion or something.
Water skiing champion, never say never. No. We're stuck in this music thing. I feel it. This is the right place. But when does the song resurface? Like, when do you get an opportunity to play the song for someone and say, what about this? Maybe this could be a single, or this could be a new song.
I think I had been coming to Nashville, just kind of writing with people. Nobody really, I would play that song for people and everybody was like, nah, I think it needs some work. And I was like, all right. And I would go home. I wouldn't even change anything. And I'd be like, all right. And I'd take it to somebody else and need some work. And then, you know, I was like,
but
you
why
know
do
what?
You keep playing it for people? Because you must think it's a good song.
Someone, I did. I guess I felt like deep down in my soul, I was like, it felt like something right to me. So I was like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just going to hold on to it. And I was like, I'm going to put it out. So I ended up getting with a producer in town and went in and recorded it. And I had never been in that kind of situation, didn't know how to like even help in a production sense. And so I was just kind of sitting in the back with big eyes, like, what do I do in this situation here?
And does he say that, wait a second, this could be a good song? Like, do you bring him that song and you say, listen, I don't care what you say, we're recording this?
I will say,
or do you play him a couple songs and you say, let's pick the best one together?
We had a couple songs, and he liked another one way more than this one. And then when we got this one finished, or Giving You Up finished, that's when he was like, that's the first song you drop. So I was like, all right, I'm trusting you. I don't know anybody. I didn't have a manager or anything at the time. So I was like, you tell me when. So we ended up putting it out and just kind of saw how it went.
And how's the song actually get momentum? How did you put it out? You put it out through like DistroKid or something?
I don't even remember the service.
Something.
Yeah, one of those
TuneCore.
TuneCore, that's the one.
Something. You throw it up on TuneCore, and then does the song get traction? How's the song actually get traction?
Dude, I have no idea. I remember.
But it has to. Does it get traction that early?
It got somehow 560 streams the first day it came out. And I was like, man, we're doing something. And then all of a sudden the next day it went to like 5,000. I was like, oh my gosh. And then it just kept growing. People were saving it and saving it and saving it. And I, like, only way I knew how to look at analytics at that point was like, oh, I just got to log into Spotify. I didn't have like a Spotify artist account I could go in.
You would just go and see
Apple,
like the, yeah.
Account.
So why ever write with anyone ever again? When looking back, it seems like your biggest song was written solo. Do you try to tap into that?
I write by myself a lot.
Do you?
I do.
How many songs? That's the only song on this debut album that you wrote solo though, right? Am I mistaken about that?
Yeah.
But you're writing a lot on your own.
I do. I write a lot by myself. I've actually been doing that a lot more recently, trying to refine, I guess, my sound. Because there's a lot of, how do I say this delicately?
No, just say it.
There's a lot
Don't
of
be
stuff
delicate.
In town that I feel like I've heard before. And like, I'll get into a room and I'll get discouraged real quick. And I feel like I went through a boot camp when I first moved to town to how to write a song. And I don't really feel like there's rules that need to be involved when writing songs.
What does that mean? When you first get to town, is it just the writers that you're in the room with?
Yeah, you're like, all right, there's a verse, there's a chorus, there's a verse.
They kind of
put you
through
the
ringer.
Maybe, and then there's a chorus.
Yeah.
And then there's like, there is no change in the melody between the verses. Like, you got to stay on that. And I was like, oh, I didn't do that on Giving You Up, and it worked.
And it worked.
Yeah.
So, but do you feel like that's kind of where you learned those basic rules? And
yeah.
Now when you get into a room, do you feel like maybe the writers you're getting in with, some of them, are trying to keep you in some kind of box?
I don't think anybody's keeping me in a box. I think I just have learned that I need to step up and say something and be like, no, actually, I want to do it this way.
Yeah.
And finding that power in a writing room is something that is...
I know one of your favorite writers is Jesse Alexander,
yeah.
Right? So, like, if she's taking you in a direction, will you have the courage to say, Jesse, I don't think this is the right path. Let's try this path. Or if she says, no, this is great, and you disagree, will you trust her or will you lean into what she's doing?
I think we would have an open discussion about it because I trust Jesse as a songwriter. I mean, she's Galay wrote The Climb. So, I mean, what can I say to her that, like, she obviously has it figured out as well. But I think for my music, I have to be conscious of, like, how I would say something, if that makes sense.
So, but when you write solo, you feel like, then you can kind of say whatever you want.
Yeah, that's a freedom for me. And that's like when so I write weird stuff solo.
Because
like,
maybe when you're writing with other people, even though you maybe have the confidence to say that's not me or that's what I would say, you're still sort of bending to what they want to do a little bit.
Yeah.
And when you're writing solo, you can just do whatever you want.
Yeah, whatever I'm feeling. And
I
feel like that's like a kind of a liberation for me. Like if I start to feel cooped up, I'll write something alone.
And does someone at your label or does your A&R or something say one of his biggest songs he wrote solo. Maybe we should have him keep writing solo. Or do they want you to write with other people?
I don't think they really care, man. They let me do whatever I want, honestly. They've really been kind to me in that way. Just kind of like, you know how to create your project or your projects, and you get off there and do it, or you go out there and do it. So
when Noah Thompson sings the song on American Idol, he auditions with the song. How do you find out about that?
So it's kind of weird. I was on tour with Riley Green, and I think we were somewhere in Kentucky. I can't remember the city we were in. But I had a guy come up to me. He's like, man, I'm going to use your song on American Idol. And I was like, oh, man, that's freaking cool.
What do you mean? He came up to you at a show?
I guess so. I don't really remember this. I can't lie.
Well, how are you telling the story then? What do you mean?
Because me and him have talked about it.
And he says he came up to you.
He came up to me. And I briefly remember because I was standing at the soundboard watching Riley set, or in between Riley set.
But a million people come up to you all the time.
Yeah. So, like, I just didn't really think anything of it. And then all of a sudden, I got reached out to by my manager, and she was like, yeah, they're going to use this song on American Idol. And it tunes in, or she was like, this is the day it's going to, like, come on. So I was like, oh, my gosh. So I definitely tuned in and watched him, and he killed it.
He did a great job, didn't he?
He ended up winning the show.
He ended up winning the show. So wait, so then you go back on, what, the final, and you sing the song with him?
I think it was, like, two shows before the final. But, yes, I go to his hometown and get
to surprise. So, first of all, I feel like that's got to be the biggest confidence boost ever. This is, like, a big, big brother moment, showing up here, singing the song with this kid who's, like, just about to win American Idol, but then you get to show up. And it's a huge power trip, I feel. It'd be a confidence boost. I would feel so confident going into that. Like, hey, young kid, I don't know. Like, what was the energy? How does that work?
So, for me, man, when I did The Voice, since I'm from Carolina and Luke Combs is from Carolina, I did One Number Away, which is Combs' song. And he ended up FaceTiming me and just kind of giving me some, like, kind words. And
like, what does he say?
He's basically like, man, just keep fighting for it. He's like, get to town, like, learn to write, do this and that. And I was just kind of trying to soak up the whole moment that I was like, oh my gosh, like, one of these people I've been listening to has actually paid attention to a song that I sang, or like, look, it paid attention to me singing one of their songs. And I was like, man, that's cool. So I was like, I want to give that back to somebody else.
So how's that work then when you do the performance? Do you, like, rehearse it all day, or do you rehearse it a couple times?
No, it was a whole surprise for him.
I didn't watch the clip, and they took it offline, so I haven't seen it because I tried to find it. And I couldn't find it.
Basically,
so what ends up happening?
He does a hometown show, and he's, like, playing all the songs that he'd done on the show. And then I think he's, like, one of his last songs. He kicks into Giving You Up, so I go up there. And
you go up there and you just jump in?
Yeah, and I just jump
in. Oh, my God. The clip is on YouTube, but when you click it, it says it's, like, taken down.
Oh, wow.
Like, the clip doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But I feel like this has got to be an incredible clip. Holy cow. So you're, what, side stage at this hometown show, and you jump on and you just sing with him. And then do you heckle moments afterwards, and then...
They didn't give us any time.
You away?
Well, they ripped him away. Like, I guess they had to get him back to L.A. or something for the next taping or wherever he had to go next. But I was just like, man, it was fun. And then they were like, all right, we'll see.
And do you reach out to him, or do you...
Oh, yeah. We talk. We're trying to get a right set up. So I want to...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Has he moved to town?
I think he's still in Kentucky. But he's doing his thing, man. He's playing shows. Good for him.
So, but will you call him up, and will you say, hey, man, what are you doing? If you want to take a go at this, you need to move to town. Would you play that figure in his life?
I would, yeah. But at this point, man, the way that country music is going, I don't know if you have to be in town necessarily. I mean, there's good writers anywhere. You can come to town, visit as much as you want. But
do you think so? Because I feel like that goes against what a lot of people say. You think you could do it, you know, not being in town?
I look at the Texas side. I see what they're doing. I look at the Oklahoma. I look at, like, the people from Kentucky that are doing it. And I don't know, man. I've kind of stopped buying into the whole, I don't know, I'm trying to think of how I want to say this. I've stopped buying into the bullshit. I don't know. I've just kind of, I want to do my own thing. I like making music. It's what fills my soul, and I don't want to have so much going around that makes me feel down or anything like that. I just want to make music. That's what I care about.
Would you? I mean, there's a lot of artists like Eric Church, Justin Moore, I think Sky McCreery, who don't really live in town.
Yeah.
Like, would that be you? Would you go move back to North Carolina, maybe come to Nashville when you have to, or, you know?
Well,
when
I love
business.
Tennessee enough where I would move like an hour away. I think an hour away where I could just have some land, spread out a little bit, and not hear the noise, because I'm not used to all the buildings. Like, I'm not used to the traffic or anything like this. So it's kind of I feel stuck when I'm in town.
Just being in a city makes you feel stuck?
Yeah. I think so.
You're a country boy.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I just, like, everywhere I look, like, there's people, and it's
but
just
But what's
weird.
The part of the industry that drives you crazy? Because it feels like you're out, you've got this big debut record, you're selling out shows, you're on the road. Like, do people just sort of feel superficial around you? Or, like what elements of it do you think, you know, maybe it's not worth being in town for?
I don't know if it's anybody in particular. I think it's just the way that I feel when I'm here.
Yeah.
Where I just kind of want to get out a little bit. And I don't feel like I'm as much as I'm in town, I don't feel like I can live the world of the country songs that we're trying to write. So they don't feel real to me when I'm writing them when I'm in town, if that makes sense.
Because your song and the name of your debut album, We Were Cowboys, this is a brilliant song. Because you've said in interviews that you're really not a cowboy.
Yeah.
But this is kind of a song about a cowboy mindset. Or this is you imagining that you're a cowboy, almost.
All I wanted to be when I was young was a cowboy.
I would have thought
yeah. I was. I mean, so, but I had no idea what it actually meant.
This is a brilliant song because you get to sort of tap it in that country thing of cowboys, but you're not a poser, right? You're not talking about some rodeo that you're riding or whatever. You're saying how you want to be a cowboy. Is that kind of what you said when you went to the room to write the song? Do you say, guys, I really want to write a song about cowboys, but I'm not a cowboy. How do we do that? Is that what you say?
Yeah. So I was in Wyoming. I was writing with Tyler Farr and Wyatt McCubbin. And we were sitting down. It was like the last day. And I just kind of had that guitar, like the opening guitar thing. And I was playing it. And I think it was Tyler came out of nowhere and was like, what if we write a song called We Were Cowboys?
He says that line.
Yeah, and I think me and Wyatt both looked at each other. I was like, well, we're out on that. Like, well, I'm not a cowboy. And then I think Wyatt was like, but did you ever think you were? And I was like, oh, yeah, I definitely thought I was. And he was like, that's the angle. And that's kind of where it came from.
And so that makes so much sense to me. And then instantly you go, wait a second, maybe I could have a song.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds as cool as We Were Cowboys, and it's going to feel right for me.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
And, okay, so then you start writing that song. That's such a great song.
It's how just like the story of how I grew up, man. It was like the mindset I was in. It was the things that I did, and I don't know. I try and put out the songs that feel real to me.
Yeah. When you, the last song on this record, Long Way Down, I love this song, too. This feels like a real Southern rock.
It's an old school song. I think it had been in town for 20 years.
I was going to ask you, how do you find this song? Craig Wiseman wrote this? Who writes this?
Craig Wiseman and, his name just escaped my mind. I cannot remember.
Here, let's see if I can find it. Who pitches you this song? How do you find this song?
Their publisher in town. He was like, man, this is a long song, but it's a long song, and it's like a song that's been around town.
Michael
forever.
Spriggs. See, yeah. Michael Spriggs. Who is that? I don't know who that is.
I couldn't tell you.
Some guy that Craig Wiseman wrote the song with. So they say to you, hey, this song's been in town for a long time.
Yeah.
Who cuts this? This is not a commercial radio hit. This is a jam.
I've always had it in my mind to not chase radio. I feel like I've went back and forth on that and been like, but it doesn't feel right to me. And I was like, this song is what I listened to when I was young. Like, I love the old like Lynyrd Skynyrd days and things like that. And that feels like a Skynyrd, like, it just reminds me of all like the kind of music that I used to listen to. So like Allman Brothers. And,
yeah. So you hear this song, a publisher plays you this song and you say, oh my God, what you just said, this reminds me of my childhood. We have to cut this.
Well, I didn't say that we had to cut it. I was like, can I throw a vocal on it? Just see how it feels. So they had to redo the whole demo because like you couldn't get this the track
the stems off. You couldn't take the vocal off what was there.
So basically, I just kind of went in, cut a demo on it, and was like, all right, I did it. It was fun to do, and I was like, I don't think I'm gonna put it out.
But who does the demo? Dan Huff does the demo?
No, Jake Gant did, or not Jake Gant? Jake, he wrote "Girl on Fire" with me. I cannot remember. I'm so bad with names, man.
I've got right here. So wait. Let's see. So let's just give credit to people. Jason Gant and Josh Osborne. Yep. So okay. So you make this demo because you're honestly just like, this is a fun song. Let me you know I'm sitting around the house. Let me throw a demo on this.
Yeah.
You know why not? But you're really not thinking there's no way this goes on the album. You're thinking there's no way I put this out.
I think at first I was, and then like I was starting to write more, so I was like, oh well, then maybe something else will beat it out.
Yeah.
And then I was like, screw it, why not just throw it on there? Like, nobody's heard that sound in forever. And like,
maybe, I love that sound.
Yeah, I do too.
Are you worried that you're going to be labeled as like a dad rocker or something? That's sort of a dad rock sound.
It definitely is. I don't care.
But then when do you go, you know what, I'm going to do this, and then who do you bring it to? Do you bring it to Dan?
Yeah.
And then Dan. I feel like Dan's got to have a ball with this song. This is like a guitar song.
Absolutely.
So does he say like, oh yeah, like let's dive into this? Does he get excited when you bring that song in, or is he kind of cool the whole time?
He's a cool guy. But yeah, no, he was ecstatic about that one, man. He really was. He was like, I haven't done something with this kind of sound in so long. So like we've kind of been like, even on the newer music that we've been cutting here recently, like we're doing things a little different. Like we're just kind of getting to both of our roots. And he's like, we're recording on tape now.
Really?
Yeah.
And just, when you listen back, does it have a different sound?
It does, man. It's a bigger, wider sound. It's the sound that I remember listening to. It's a different atmosphere of music and a different time frame of music that has always spoke to me.
Isn't that expensive to record on tape?
I hope not. I guess we'll find out when we get the bills.
It's got to be more expensive than...
I think the rolls are like $800 extra dollars. So,
okay. Yeah. That's in the book. Already... That's a couple tickets to one of your shows. But hang on. So Long Way Down, you're playing... No, you're keeping the tickets very affordable for the fans. I just want to clear that up. No. He's being very reasonable about this. But hold on. So Long Way Down is like such a jam. So does Dan bring in other guitar players? Or who's playing guitars on that record?
So guitars on that particular song was Tom Bukovec, which is one of my favorite.
Yeah.
Chris Donegan.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
amazing, and Dan played some stuff on it too.
And does Dan kind of orchestrate everyone and say, like, but then there's a jam at the end of the song? Does that sort of happen naturally? Like,
no,
how does that jam happen?
They cut the click, and we just go for it for as long as we feel it.
So the song is all to a click except for that ending
Except
bit.
For that whole...
And they cut it, and then they just go,
we
let's...
just go off the rails and just see who plays, who steps up where.
Yeah.
And, just kind of it's a mess in like the best way.
And would you have been allowed to put this song anywhere on the album but the last track? It kind of feels like it's a last track song, which I love.
It felt like a last track song.
Because it's just sort of, it's not a throwaway, but it's just like, this is here. This song to me seems like nobody let you put the song on the record and they all let you compromise by putting it at the end.
No, man.
That's not what happened here.
No, I made that call. I was like, it feels like a last track. It's kind of like the finale track of the record for me.
Yeah, I love it. I got all the way to the end and I said, oh my God, this is. Are you playing it live? Or?
Oh, yeah. We play it live.
Really?
It's fun, man.
I tried to find
We cut like 2 minutes out of it because it's like 7 minutes
no,
long.
No, why wouldn't you jam it out? And people are there for you, don't they? I think they want to hear the song. I think they want to hear the jam.
I don't know, we've played it a couple times and like the full length and it didn't work as well as we wanted it to, so
what
we
was this
it
thing you did something recently, you did like an Allman Brothers tribute at the Beacon.
I did at the
what
Beacon.
Was that
so basically it was the 75th birthday of Greg Allman, so we went out and we had Old Dominion, Gavin DeGraw, Jackson Dean, Need to Breathe, there was quite a few people. I cannot remember.
And anybody. you sing Whipping Post, right?
I did. Yeah, that was a ball for
That's
me.
That's a tough song to sing, isn't it?
Man, it was. I think I had a vocal break in the first, in like the first chorus, and then finally I was good after that. But I was that's embarrassing.
Kind of natural. Wait, what was embarrassing?
The vocal crack that I had.
Oh, you
the
had
first
vocal crack?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was bad one too.
Oh. Yeah. Nah, I think they were with you. I think they were cheering for you. I saw that clip.
Yeah,
they were freaking out. But is that like the Beacon? Does that come naturally to you? That style? I feel like it kind of does.
It does. I grew up listening to a lot of blues music and a lot of soul and like singers, like real, true, like people that would wail. Like Chris Stapleton's another one who's just like, he's a singer, like when you hear it. And Greg Allman's the same way. So to be able to jump on that stage and do that, it feels right to do things like that, like in my vocals. It at least brings me back to a style that I know and love.
Yeah. That was a great clip. I thought instantly, I was like, oh, he's at the Beacon. You can tell because it's so distinguished
and
looking.
And the Beacon, golly. What
is that your first time in the Beacon?
That was. It was a beautiful place.
It's one of the best. I'm biased to it, but it's gorgeous inside. The interior is incredible. So there's also the song on the album, Granny's Got a Garden, which I think is hilarious. I love this song. This is literally about your grandma who smokes a lot of weed.
Pretty much,
right?
Yeah.
What's the how do you bring this into a writer's room? How do you bring that idea?
So
is that well received when you bring that idea into a room?
It was kind of funny. Me and Rob Lifford were at Doghouse or Dogwood, one of the two. I don't remember Doghouse. And I'm kind of talking to some other buddies at another table, and I was like, "Yeah, man, grandma's been smoking the hell out of some weed lately." And he was like, "Did you just say your grandma smokes weed?" And I was like, "Yeah, man, you wouldn't believe it. She has a couple plants too." And he was like, "Well, we got to write about that." So we had a write coming up like the next week or 2 weeks after that with the Warren Brothers, and we just kind of went into it and brought the idea and told them what it was about, and we just kind of talked about our grandmas for a while and the things that they had, like the grocery list on the phone bill is probably one of my favorite lines,
because right
my grandma, that's the only way she'll go to the grocery store if she has a list, like a handwritten list. So
did she like the song?
She loved it.
She came out, right?
Yeah,
she came out with you at the Nashville show.
She sure did.
And she's singing with you, or what happened?
No, she's just sitting back there on a rocking chair. She just wanted to be on stage.
She just wanted to be on stage.
I'll just get you up there.
And now do you guys, that's so funny. I can't, and there's a story here too, right? Like, didn't she catch you when you were younger?
Yeah, man. I kind of went to the house for breakfast one morning and had smoked in the car and was like, they'll never know what that damn smell is. So I went in the house, I hugged her, and I was like, hey, how you doing and everything? She was like, have you been smoking? And I was like, yeah, Grandma, I have. I've kind of cowered down a little bit.
I would have denied. Deny till you die.
Oh, well, I can't lie to my grandma. She always finds out.
Why not? So. I think you totally could.
Oh, man. But I ended up telling her, and she's like, well, I need to talk to you. And takes me back into her bedroom, and she's like acting like she's about to rip me a new one. She pulls out a drawer and the bag of weed and starts rolling a joint. And then we just started smoking, and breakfast was really good that morning.
Any other family members come out as smoking weed?
Every last one of them.
Are you serious?
I'm serious, man.
The whole family.
The whole family. I had no idea.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's
well, hilarious. Everybody except for my pops will not. He's very straight laced. My grandpa's maybe. Everybody else, yeah, they don't care.
This is fun. This is a fun. The Marlowe family sounds like a fun family to be in.
Yeah, and they were the strictest parents growing up.
Were they? Now what? Now they're out partying. Now they want to get involved. Yeah, this is. I feel like it'd be fun to be in the Marlowe family. Yeah, you know, now you're out playing shows. You're out opening for people. You just announced Chase Rice tour.
Yeah,
this is gonna be big. When you go out with Brad Paisley, when were you out with Brad Paisley last year? Right, or the year last year. So when you go out with Brad Paisley, he always brings his openers out to sing I'm Still a Guy with them, right? So you did this every night?
I did.
And how does that work? Because I'm always curious. Like, does he have the time at the beginning of the tour to say, here's what we're going to do. Let's rehearse it a couple times. Here's your part. Here's what I'm going to sing. Yep. Or do you kind of just go up and wing it? Like, how's that work?
No, we hit it once and, like, I knew the words, so...
But, just because you grew up with the song?
Yeah. So, yeah. Like, I knew the words, went up there, and then he was like, all right, perfect. And so it wasn't like... It's a very relaxed thing up there.
Yeah. So, but you go up, and then are you taking phones of fans and doing selfies, too?
Yeah.
That's like a highlight of the show.
We're messing around with people, and he always takes somebody's phone, goes through their Amazon list if it's unlocked, and it's pretty funny.
That it's so good. That's like a kind of like a big moment in the Brad Paisley show when he brings out the opener, right?
Yeah, man, it's fun.
Oh my God, he's one of my favorites, Brad Paisley.
He's such a good dude and just an incredible guitar player.
Do your guitar players in your band, do they kind of nerd out over him and do they kind of freak out
over
his
guitar
playing? Yeah, they
do, and I do. Like, I'm over there looking at all his
gear. Is he cool about though? Like, will he kind of...
Oh yeah, he'll let you see whatever you want to see, and his guitar tech's super awesome and like let you play what you want.
So are you picking up his tellies and you're kind
of... I will not pick up. Yeah, I personally would not. He said that we could pick it up and all of us were like, nope.
I would have picked him up. I would have gone into that.
Well, he's got that 52 that's super nasty, blonde 52. And I really wanted to play it, but I was like,
I would have played it. Why do you think not? Because you're worried that you're going to dent it or you're going to screw it up or something?
I just know my luck, man. And
just you don't want to be the one to...
Not a 52. If it was like a brand new, I would have been like, yeah, man, I'll play it.
Those things, he takes those things and he puts the G-benders in all of them, though, which is hilarious. Like, they're already messed up by the time they get to him.
That's very true.
I would have picked that thing up and I would have just dug into it. That's what I would have done. This is big, though. So now you're going out with Chase Rice. A lot of dates. How many dates are you doing with Chase?
No, we're only doing two with him. Yeah,
screw that. Two dates with Chase Rice. And then what? More solo dates?
No, we got the Thomas Rhett tour in Canada for 3 weeks, which is going to be a long 3 weeks. It's gonna be
really?
February.
Why?
Because
it's just straight back-to-back 3 weeks.
Back-to-back,
you fly
three
out
weeks.
There and then you go.
We bus up and then stay in Canada for 3 weeks in the middle of February, which is going to be freezing cold. So I'm not good with cold weather.
Isn't North Carolina, doesn't it get cold?
Not too bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not too bad at all. I mean, like, we'll get down to the 40s or 30s, but
maybe
every once in a while we'll get sub-freezing.
Is this when you start making the real money, though, when you start playing shows and now you're selling out shows? Like, is that when the real funds start coming in?
I think... The fun or the funds?
The funds.
I haven't seen funds. I don't know funds.
What do you mean? I think at this level, there's got to be some funds coming in, right?
Oh, man. After COVID, like, we had to take that. We had to take anything we could. So, man, I feel like next year we'll maybe start making some good cash. But this year, man, we're just doing it because we love it, man. I've always been a firm believer that if you do what you love and you – do it the right way, that the money will come. And I'm not somebody that really cares too much about money. It's just not something that I strive towards. I just strive to do what I love.
Yeah. What are you going to get, though? When the big funds come in, do you have a purchase in mind?
I'm getting a bus with a bunk in the back, or a bed in the back.
You're going to buy a bus?
Oh, hell no. I'm just going to make sure that I can have a
That you can have a
have
bus.
A bed in the back.
Yeah, we were just talking about this, that your last bus... had a bed in the back that you would sleep in.
Got spoiled quick.
Yeah,
man.
And your band hated you because you had the whole lounge in the back, and they thought you were a diva. But but this is what you're going to do now.
Oh, for sure.
With the first chance you have to get back into a bus like that, screw the band. They can sleep in bunks. I've got the bunk in the back.
They
right?
call me King of the Castle. For
is that
a
what they call you?
Yeah,
but you're the name on the marquee, so I think it's warranted. I think it's allowed.
It's funny, man. They've all been my best friends
for
a long time. Yo, I brought them all from Carolina, and then we've been playing. For
what are the odds that you have friends from North Carolina who are great players? Isn't that absurd?
It is. Well, we all grew up going to a certain church that had like a very high level of musicianship. That just kind of ran through it. So like I met these guys through that, and then when push came to shove, we started playing a couple shows, like bar shows, before I'd even done The Voice, and then after The Voice, we started doing more and more, and then kind of moved to Nashville. They had a tryout, and they all made it, so they're still sticking with me.
What do you
me.
Mean they had a tryout?
Like, my manager tried to fire them.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Oh yeah,
because you didn't think they were up to snuff, or?
Yeah.
And come on, in hindsight, were they up to snuff at the time?
Yeah. I mean, they weren't.
So you were
just
assuming.
They're a lot better now, but
they weren't as good.
Yeah.
She thought, what are the odds that these kids from North Carolina are going to be? We're in Nashville. Let's get some Nashville players.
They take it seriously, man. They're incredible people and incredible players.
If they didn't know you, would they have come here, or they probably would still be in North Carolina?
I think they'd still be in Carolina, man. Are they? Yeah, they technically.
They
still
are. They
still
haven't moved to Nashville.
Mm-mm.
And why is it you just feel good out with them? You feel like because your band looks very cool. Because I would have thought that your band was
we're a
like,
Motley Crue for sure.
I thought for sure. You know what your band looks like? Musicians, right?
Yeah.
Like they look like people who are guitar players and bass players, and like I thought for sure your band would have been a bunch of Nashville guys.
Oh.
But they're just kids. They're just guys from North Carolina.
Yeah, they're just guys I grew up with pretty much. So.
And are they going to move to Nashville or no?
Maybe eventually. But it's only a 6.5-hour drive. They'll drive up for bus call.
Yeah.
Ride the bus and drive back.
And are they cool, like, opening? So now there's like a whole new perspective here. Because now when they're on tour with Brad Paisley, like, are they cool around, you know, massive country stars?
Yeah.
They can hold their own. They're jaded the same way because they've just done so much, or because that just isn't important to them. They're in it for the music, and
it for the music, man. We really care about that. We like to make friends, like that's what we care about, and like just like having good people around us, and like that's all we care about.
So is there a music director or something, or you guys are sort of just putting the set together and everything yourself?
We all just kind of have a group chat. We text back and forth about it, and kind of find what we do and what we like, what we don't like, and after a show we'll have like a meeting and be like, did that feel right? No, let's switch these two. So it's kind of a group effort.
Yeah. So will you go in like before the Thomas Rhett tour, you're gonna spend like 3 days at SIR rehearsing, or like you feel like you got this? Like
after we've been playing this tour, we've been doing it since June or July or something like that. So like we have all the songs down. It'll just be a matter of maybe like an hour or a couple hours at SIR just to get the 30-minute set lockdown, because we're used to playing a 90, so this is going to be cake for us.
So how are you going to whittle it down? Is it going to be different every night, or are you going to pick a set list and
I don't know. It might change up. We like to switch things around.
Yeah.
We'll get bored quick.
Where's the best part in the set to put Giving You Up in? Is it the last song?
Right now it's the last before the encore.
So it's not the last. Last song, but then you're then you
I
do
walk
an encore.
Off, then
and then what do you do
we,
for the
if we
encore?
Get an encore, we'll do Burn 'Em All.
Burn 'Em All.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big song too.
Yeah,
why is that the way to do it? Why not put Giving You Up, you know, in the encore and make sure they stick around?
I want the energy on the last song. I want everybody to feel like leave on a high.
It's a better last song.
It is.
Independently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a little bit more tempo to it. It just feels better.
And what are you opening with?
First song is, what is the first song? I should know this.
Come on.
Yeah, Sober as a Drunk.
Sober as a Drunk. Great song. Off the first EP.
Yep.
Not on the debut record.
No.
Why not? Too many songs on the debut record?
No, I just didn't feel it. I didn't want to put all the songs that I'd already had out back. I wanted to select the couple that I really liked out of them and the ones that really felt like moved the record forward. So, yeah.
Is there someone who is a Cameron Marlowe fan? Like, are you starting to put a face to these fans and saying a Cameron Marlowe fan is this kind of person? Or is it a pretty diverse group of people?
You know, it's actually pretty diverse. Some cities are really different than others.
Who came out to the New York show? Like, what kinds of people? Was it like country people, or did you feel like it was like New York finance people?
No, there was some country people. I think that a lot of them came from upstate New York.
That makes sense.
Or at least looked like that. Yeah. Came from upstate.
Isn't that
I don't know.
Crazy
they might have lived
most bands don't do that well in New York, except I think Spencer Crandall just sold out Mercury Lounge.
Yeah.
We were out with Breland. He sold out two nights in New York.
Yeah.
And then you sold out your show in New York. Like, New York's becoming like a country hub.
It looks like it, man. And the crowd was awesome.
Were they?
Yeah, they were super hype. And sometimes you don't know. But, like, I think our best show, which blew my mind, was right next to Harvard in Boston.
Where'd you play? Paradise?
No, I can't remember. I'm so... Is that the Sinclair?
Sinclair. Yeah. That's a fun club, actually. That's like
a
rock
club.
Yeah.
And they are rowdy as can be in there, man. And they're singing every song.
Boston's a big country market, though. They like country music.
I'd never been there, so it was kind of mind-blowing for me.
Yeah. Cameron Marlowe. Okay, here's what we've learned.
All right.
We've learned that these kids that he grew up with are on the road with him. And that meeting Cameron was the best thing that ever happened to them in their entire lives. That's incredible. We've learned that he's so dialed in at this point, maybe a couple hours in the rehearsal room. And then he's going to be out on the road with Thomas Rhett. Are you doing arenas in Canada?
Yep.
With Thomas Rhett?
Yeah.
How do you learn how to do that? I don't understand. I feel like this whole thing came to you very easily. You're natural at this.
I don't know, man. I've definitely had to cut my teeth a long time.
Where are you cutting your teeth? Three songs in, you're writing your biggest hit.
We've had a lot of bad shows.
But do you feel like why? Because of the band, or do you feel like you had to learn how to be a performer?
I had to learn how to be a performer. Yeah, I had to learn how to be comfortable. I had to learn how to make the people feel it like they're with you. I think that's a big part of
what does that mean?
I feel like if you can have a connection with your fans and like feel like they're just as much a part of the show that you're putting on, then like you're doing something right. Like I want them to leave and be like, man, I feel like I got to know Cameron even though he's just singing.
So how is that just because of a intention or an intent that you put behind your singing, or are there some tricks that you do, or do you say something?
It's between my talking points that I say sometimes during the shows and the way that I sing, and I don't know. I just try and be personal. I try and meet as many of them as I can, and they're the ones who drive everything for me. That's what I care about is the fans.
Yeah. That makes sense. And then, okay, so the album's out now. We Were Cowboys. This has been out for a minute. But if you haven't listened to it, you gotta go listen to it. It's on Spotify. This is a fun album cover, too. What was the vibe of this album cover? Was it like a 70s throwback thing?
It's funny because it looks just like my grandma's house.
Is it her house?
Smoke. No, it's not. But she used to have wood paneling all over her walls.
Yeah.
And we sat and took a bunch of pictures. And I was like, you know what? That looks like it. That reminds me of where I was when I was young. And like... for the title track of We Were Cowboys, so I was like, that's the one.
I think it's great with the Columbia logo in the corner.
Try and be classic.
It's classic, right? Do you get a say if you want the logo in the corner?
Yeah.
And you go, yeah, let's do it, because it just instantly looks timeless, right?
I agree.
Oh, I love that. This is big. Cameron Marlowe's doing big things. I don't know how he's doing it. He hasn't been doing it that long, and it feels like he's been doing this for 10 years, which I don't understand. Do you feel like you've somehow gotten your 10,000 hours in? Like somehow, maybe from listening to records or from going to concerts yourself as a kid. Like, how did you learn how to do this? I just don't. I don't get it.
I'm a music junkie. I listen to everything, all genres, anything I can. I focus more on the country and the rock and like, I've diversed myself in all the classic country I possibly can, all the 90s country, all the country today. I'm constantly listening to music. If I'm at my house, I'm listening.
So by the time you write Giving You Up, you've got so much time listening to country songs that you know what a good country song is.
I wouldn't say I knew. I just kind of...
But you must have known something, right? Intuitively.
No, I mean, it was a whim. I really mean that. I had no intention on any of this happening. I just love music. That's kind of where it started.
Oh my God, Cameron Marlowe on the podcast. This is the last episode of the year for us.
Oh,
so we're closing it with Cameron.
Love that.
Yeah, so no pressure. This was great though.
I hope it was a good one.
I feel like have we left anything out? What have we left out?
Yeah, I feel good.
I heard you say in an interview your favorite movie is Saving Private Ryan, right?
Yeah,
is that true?
I do love Saving Private
Ryan. That's a great movie, isn't it?
It is, man. That's another timeless movie that'll never go away.
Oh my God. That first scene, sometimes this might be so disturbed, but sometimes when I'm like trying to watch something amazing, I watch that first scene
to see if it holds up the same.
No, because even though that first scene is so disturbing, it's so like it's like cinematic brilliance to me. Mm. Like I almost, for as disturbing as it is, I'm almost inspired by how much coordination it took to pull that scene off.
That is a good point.
That I just think it's like mind blowing how incredible. It's like one of the best scenes in all of cinema.
Yeah.
When they're storming the beaches of Normandy.
Definitely.
And the coronation, I don't know, that it blows my mind, that first scene.
You ain't lying. I'm a big movie person.
Are you?
I love movies. I get a lot of song titles from movies.
Really?
Yeah, I do. So, like, I love television, movies, all that. Anything that, yeah, I can, like, maybe catch a song title from or, like, feel emotion
like
from.
What? Like, any songs on this record that the titles were taken from movies?
No, I wouldn't say that any of that were on that record were, but...
Coming soon.
Yeah, I do. I have a couple songs that came from Yellowstone. I have.
Oh yeah.
A couple songs that are coming from. I just actually wrote one the other day from the new show Tulsa King.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So, oh, this is good.
It's gonna be cool.
What movies did you like this year? Anything good?
I'm actually watched one last night that was pretty insane. It just came out. It's just top of mind, so I'm talking about.
Which
it.
One?
It's called Prisoners.
What was that?
It's on Netflix.
Wait, that's What's that about? That's not...
Basically, the two girls that get lost, or that get taken.
No, I didn't see that.
It's on there now. It's number one right now.
Am I out of the loop?
This I think
is a
you
hot,
might
this
be.
Is a hot movie?
It is.
Shoot, I gotta watch
insane.
This. How, you finished it, or you're in the middle of it?
I've got like 24, or 20 or 40 minutes.
And what happens? These two girls get taken prisoner?
Two girls get taken, no, but the people that they think murdered the girls get taken by the families as prisoner.
It's like the people that they think...
Like, they have, like, a suspect in mind. They let the suspect go. And then, like, the families are like, why are you letting the suspects go?
Isn't this an old movie?
No. Unless they remade it. I don't know.
There was a movie called Prisoners. I think it was called Prisoner. And it was the same concept, that this little kid gets kidnapped, and then there's a suspect, and they let the suspect go, and then the dad kidnaps the suspect and holds him prisoner.
Well, they might have remade it then. I might have to go watch the original.
The original one's great. I think Ben Affleck is... Maybe I'm wrong about it.
Really?
Hang on. Let's look it up.
Yeah, we gotta
Hang
this
on.
Out.
Wait. It's actually a great movie and very disturbing. Prisoner movie. Prisoners. Thriller crime. Oh, no. Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah, Prisoners. Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman. Is this the same movie that I'm thinking
it
of?
It might be the same movie, and maybe it came out.
Is Hugh Jackman in the in this?
Yeah, I think he is. So maybe that movie came out or a while back, but I thought it...
But you were watching it on Netflix? No, it's a great movie.
It just got released on Netflix, so that's why I'm in the know now.
No, I actually remember when it came out. It was a great movie. Yeah.
So I
old, though. It's like 10 years old.
Yeah, is it really?
Yeah.
Okay, well...
I'm glad we cleared this up for you. Yeah. No, but it's good, though. It was it's very, very thrilling.
Yeah.
Very disturbing. Oh my God.
It is disturbing.
Disturbing.
Man.
Ugh. All right, we're done here. Cameron Marlowe on the podcast, on the road, 2023. He's got 3 days left. This is gonna come out today. So you could see him this weekend. If you're listening to this, he's got 3 shows left this weekend in Texas.
Houston, Dallas, and Kansas City.
You're crazy not to go. You have to go.
Gotta go.
And you gotta listen to the record, and you gotta see him next year on the road. And new music coming next year, who knows?
Oh yeah. Oh, always. Putting new music out.
Yeah.
Got a bunch.
Yeah. I like you because you're not like, there's some artists who are doing great things on TikTok, and I like that too. But you're not like obsessing over this content stuff on TikTok. You're kind of just like putting out great music and playing badass shows, and that's enough. That's all we need.
I commend them for how they can do it. I personally don't know how to do it. I wipe my hands of it. I mean, I'll post the videos that feel real to me and feel like stuff that I want to share. But I just like to lay under the radar, man, and just do my thing.
I feel that. I feel that energy. You're in it for the right reasons.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. All right. Cameron Marlowe on the podcast. Thanks for coming in. Right,
thank you.
We'll see you next time.
All right, boss.